Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. Welcome back, everybody, to the Evolving to Exceptional podcast. I'm really excited. I had a great pre-conversation with Terry Powers, who's here with us today. She is the VP of Operations at ITF Group, and she has some really unique challenges and experiences given her organization, what her organization does. And I'm really excited to talk about some of those challenges and how you guys have addressed them and continue to address them. So why don't you start by just giving us a little bit of your background, how you ended up where you are today, and maybe a little bit about why it is you do what you do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on today. It's definitely a privilege to have this conversation. So thank you for the space. I definitely appreciate it. So funny enough, like most of us in some type of HR or people capacity, I just kind of fell into the position. It's always so funny to me because people have passions, but then they also have skill sets. And those things do not necessarily always combine. It's not always the exact same thing that you're passionate about and that you're really, really good at. So I started my role actually in the operations field because I'm really good at being organized. I'm not shy. I have no problem bringing people together, asking those hard questions. So when I first started my career, I wasn't even in this industry. I was in the medical industry. I used to do billing and coding for doctors. And soon thereafter, I started learning more and more about, well, what makes a business run? What makes it successful? How come this team is doing really well and this one isn't? So I started kind of trying out different business avenues, and I wound up in operations. From that, I started performing a ton of the HR stuff, background checks, verification of employment, helping employees understand their benefits. And that's actually where I started to find my passion. I love explaining benefits, breaking it down so people can easily ingest it, and then they know what all they have in their plan. Most people do not practice and use all of their benefits, which is a shame because they're paying so much money for it. And so I started really getting into benefits administration, benefits management. I started working for an advertising agency as their operations manager, and that's when I really started to focus and get sharp in operations and people operations and the bridging of that. And what does that look like? And why is it so important? Like, you have your operations, you have the way the business works, you have your employees. Well, there's definitely a relationship there that I feel can easily be neglected. And so I loved being that liaison between the operations, the strategy, and the people so that we can come up with a good plan so that not only can we make sure the CEO and the board of directors are getting the goals and objectives that they want, but also so that it makes sense to the employee so that they understand the value of what they're doing, the why of they're doing it, how their cog in this big machine makes or breaks our business and why we appreciate them and their hard work. So from advertising, that was back in California. I've lived in a few states, but we ended up here in Missouri. My husband's family's here. I love it here. I'm done moving. So definitely staying here in the St. Louis area. When we first moved here, I found myself drawn to a couple logistics and trucking job ads that I had seen. So I actually went ahead and applied as a recruiter for a trucking company. And I worked there for 3 years, and I started out as a recruiter. Aced that, loved it. Drivers are the bread and butter of America. And from that, I took over our entire HR department. And then I also took over our safety and claims department. And that is when I had this epiphany that, oh my gosh, all of these things work collaboratively and separately. And I told myself, I was like, I need to learn how to think this way. I know that there's education out there. I know there's knowledge out there. But what is it and where do I find it? And that's actually why I went back to school for business. And that's when I went and got my master's in business administration. I have the emphasis in HR already. So that was fantastic. But it allowed me to learn how to think like a business owner, mm-hmm. which then helped me become better, with operations and explaining the strategy and bridging that gap with people. So in a nutshell, this was not at all what I went to college for. I went to college for marketing and sales and communication, but I definitely see how communication plays into every role that I've had and how it has been this tying, fate string, if you will, throughout my my career path so far. So it's been a whirlwind, but it's been wonderful.
It's funny as you're talking about that and your path to where you are, how common that theme is in my talking with different people, especially those that have made it to that level of thinking that, you know, I myself thought I was going to, you know, went to law school, thought I was going to be an attorney, and ended up pivoting into the talent management HR space. And kind of opposite you, I moved the other direction. I started in legal and talent management and then expanded into operations. Wow. And I love your comments there. And I think a lot of HR people, that seems to be the case, that they ended up there not as though they were seeking it out, but they kind of found their way there.
Yep.
And I love the way you talked about how operations really is all about, you know, the people and how the organizations run and how much synergy there is, kind of between those areas and how they really have to, you know, work closely together. And there's a lot of elements and overlap there. So it's interesting, the similarity there in terms of those functions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you're never going to have successful operations if you have not set your people up for success. And I can definitely see that getting lost in the grind, especially if, you're new to business or if it's your first time owning a company. I can understand how very easy it is to get lost in that people aspect. But if you don't have the right culture, the right setup, the right environment, then unfortunately your operations are going to suffer from that. And that's just something that I've learned over the years and experienced many, many times. And many of my peers have had that experience as well. So when you find these successful companies, one of the formulas that you find is because they found the formula that works for them, for their people and their operations and their strategy. And being able to combine those and understand your employees and understand how to talk to them and communicate with them is just so essential. So, yeah, it's very interesting how it all ties together, how they're definitely individual, but you have to bridge them together in order to find what you want. And that's just not even in work, right? I mean, that's in college, too. You find your study groups. You find those people that have the same objectives and goals, and you form your groups, and you study together, and you learn more together. That same situation translates into business. You got to have your peoples.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You made a comment earlier, and I can't remember what it was in relation to, but you said something about a person is just a cog or a part of the machine, right? Like and I think about that a lot, and what you were just talking about with operations and how a lot of organizations, especially particularly in like the manufacturing space, invest a lot in terms of their maintenance and their operational efficiencies and keeping their systems running properly. And what's interesting, I think, is that we try to apply the same concepts to people, but people are living beings. And so if we don't treat them as such, if we treat them as a replaceable part in a machine, then that's the output we get. We don't get that optimum performance. We don't get those greater results because they don't understand the why, the big picture. They don't feel connected. All of those elements you were talking about. And I think as the leader in HR, to understand what people are doing, to understand how the business is being executed, makes you so much more effective at providing guidance and input and the right support, rather than just bringing in like check the box type activities which nobody wants to do, right? Nobody wants to have extra work just for the sake of it. And what always seems like a really good idea, you know, maybe academically, and you having just gotten an MBA and being in the workplace, this is a great, you know, kind of way to look at it of what sounds really good in the textbook doesn't always translate real well to the real work environment.
Oh, absolutely. Where I'm at now, I work for ITF Group. We're an international organization based here in Hazelwood, Missouri, which is a tiny little suburb right outside of St. Louis. So we're a hop, skip, and a jump away. But what we actually started as a very tiny company, we've been operating since 2012. Sam Birkin is our owner and founder here. He actually started our trucking company in his basement in St. Peter's. And it was just him for a while. And then his wife and his brother and his mom all came together. And, you know, now we have 200 employees just overseas. We have another, I want to say 60 something people here in headquarters. Then we also have our warehouses. We have our remote employees. And then overseas, we have our Uzbekistan office. That's where Sam is from, Tashkent, Uzbekistan. And so we also have a school and another headquarters there. And so there's a ton of collaboration going on between all of these entities. And so it's definitely been challenging finding that communication solution. And I don't think that there's one single solution that's necessarily working. I think it's a combination of the operations that we have and then really bridging together the human aspect of that. And again, you know, as you were saying, one size does not fit all. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, American culture and Middle Eastern culture have a ton of similarities, right? We have our families, we go to school, we go to work, we love community, we love our neighbors, you know, we eat together. But there's definitely a lot of differences as well. So something that I have found quite challenging is how do I bridge those gaps between cultures and still create this cohesive entity with everybody's different experiences and their personal experiences and their professional experiences. And how do we bridge all of that together so that we all work towards the same goals? Because ultimately, that's what we're all here to do. Like, we all want to win. We want to be the best 3PL in the world. And it's very exciting because we have the opportunity to do that. But yes, it's definitely been very interesting learning from all of our teammates. Ramadan is actually next week. It starts on the 22nd. And I learned so much just from asking our HR equivalent overseas. I said, how do we show our people here who are practicing and observing Ramadan? How do we support them? How do we celebrate with them? What is Ramadan? And so one of the things that I really love about Sam and about our company is we want to educate and we want to teach everybody. And we all want to celebrate the wins and we all want to celebrate the holidays together. Which is kind of funny, you know, today being St. Patrick's Day, I've had a number of conversations explaining St. Patrick and why we wear green and the whole pinching concept, you know, yep. it's interesting. You know, I actually do want to backtrack just slightly. I have a really funny story. So I work in a company. We have 21 different countries represented here. I have a coworker. He speaks no less than 15 different languages. I actually thought he spoke 12. No, he speaks 15. And he's fluent in all of them. And so we were talking the other day, and he let me know that the Uzbek team, we had sent them on a conference, and they were up in the mountains, and they were having a really great time. And I was like, oh, let's video call him. So we video call him, and we're chatting with them. And the question was asked, oh, you guys are in the mountains. It looks like you're really high up there. And our coworker who's at the retreat writes back, he goes, yes, I am very tall. I am over 6 feet tall. It was at that minute that I realized the most simple of communications can be misconstrued. And it was at that minute that I realized that I have to start framing and thinking and strategizing this completely differently, because English is hard enough. It's challenging enough. You can speak to another English speaker and have miscommunications.
Yes.
But now I have 15 languages that I have to somehow bridge together so that we are all on the same page. Whew, it's been crazy lately, but I feel like we're on a good path towards that. Definitely always a work in progress and definitely evolving.
So do they, Do they speak English in Uzbekistan or okay, they do. So how many different languages are you dealing with on a regular basis?
Every day I deal with three different languages: English, Russian, and Uzbekistan. However, we do have our Hispanic and Latinos population and culture here. So we do have Spanish, and we also have Puerto Rican Spanish. And then we have different places in the Middle East as well, and each of those have their own dialects in addition to that. So that's fun. And then just here in America, we've got people on the East Coast, the West Coast, from the South, and each of us have our own dialects and our individual ways that we communicate as well.
So do all of your employees also speak English, or do you actually have to go through translators?
No, everybody does have a basic level understanding of English. Overseas, though, they do learn British English. Mm-hmm. So they learn a little bit of the American English, more so when they're working with us. But just the other day, I had to explain our COO. He came over and he goes, "Hey, something was said to me, and I just want to know how should I take this? Like, what are we doing?" And I believe that the statement was, "Sounds good, that's a wrap." And then whoever he was talking to went and went back to work. But he didn't understand that's a wrap. He goes, "Well, what does that mean? Are we done? Did they finish? Do I need to cover something? Like, what is actually happening?" And so we had the whole conversation like, "Oh, no, that's just a colloquialism, meaning we're good. We finished our goal. We have completed the project and we're good to move on to the next thing." It was a good thing, but he was so worried that it was, you know, is this a negative? How do I respond? So we have a lot of those conversations in the office.
I love those examples. And as you're talking about it, I can think about even being in an organization that was primarily in the Midwest and the South. Everybody kind of has those like unique little colloquialisms where you say certain things and other people don't necessarily understand them or understand what you're referring to, especially when you get into acronyms or things like that, that makes it even more difficult. So I can only imagine when you're talking about, and it's such a great point that there's not just one English, there's multiple, you can still be speaking English, but like the way that you say things, the way that you phrase things makes a big difference. What have you found helps the most with that? What have you found is needed in order to overcome or to it's probably not something you necessarily overcome, it's something you have to keep dealing with, but in order to navigate effectively?
Absolutely. Number one is patience. Mm-hmm. You have to show patience and you have to show grace. I speak very fast. I get excited and I just want to go. I've learned I have to slow down and I have to realize that my words, not only do they have power, but they have so many different meanings. So I've definitely had to refine my vocabulary. I have had to use I don't want to say smaller words, but more exact words. So my verbiage has definitely transitioned itself so that when I ask a question, I ask it in the most simple terms. Or if I'm giving an instruction, I give it in the most simple terms. And then it's always important when you send a message to make sure it was received accurately. So not only do I give an instruction, but then I ask, "What did you hear me say?"
Mm-hmm.
And then if they respond and say, "Okay, I understand you want me to do X, Y, Z, and we're in alignment, awesome, let's go on to the next thing." If not, then I take the time and I backtrack and say, "Okay, let me try explaining this a different way." We do have many different people that do speak the native language. And so if there is that confusion and it is proving challenging, and sometimes, you know, emotions can get a little high on the other end of the phone because people feel like they're failing when they don't immediately understand. And that is not true at all.
Right.
We're so much harder on ourselves than other people are on us when we're just trying to learn together. And so that's actually another thing that I've been doing is, you don't have to be afraid to say, "I don't understand," or "I don't know." And so it's very important that our culture here is patient and graceful and kind. Because if you don't have those three things, then you're never going to be able to communicate. And I do mean that across the board. Communication requires asking clarifying questions if you don't understand, which requires bravery and patience. And when you're speaking with a non-native speaker, it really is your responsibility to make sure that they are heard, especially in a position like mine. It is integral to our operations that each person here feels heard, not only in their native tongue, but in English, or if they're speaking Russian, or over email, or over a text message. So patience is definitely number one in that.
I think what's so interesting is, and you said it too, communication between two, you know, native Midwestern English speakers can be complicated. When it comes to language, it's really the expression of our own experience put into words. Everything we say is a reflection of our past experiences and the lens through which we observe and interact with and have observed and interacted with the world. And that leaves room for a lot of misalignment. It leaves room for a lot of misunderstanding. And that can create, like you said, a huge drag or a lot of unnecessary conflict and angst if you're not intentional, if you don't have that patience and that intentionality. I was talking to an expert in around feedback the other day, and we were talking about how often feedback is misunderstood. Even just hearing that I'm going to give feedback is a trigger for most people. So the anxiety provoking element of that for somebody who is now struggling to navigate the intricacies of that language, I can only imagine what that struggle must be. So you kind of have to be, I would think, even more self-aware as you're going into those conversations. And I think that what you said about patience is so good, and the strategy to have it repeated back makes just so much sense, so that you make sure that you really are on the same page as well. I wonder too, do you find at all that it helps to really put things in writing as well to make sure that, you know, people are walking away with the same impression or result? Or is that actually more complicated because of the different, different dialects or different way of understanding language?
Oh, excellent question. And I can tell you through trial and error that it's great to kickstart a conversation in text, but then you do need to have those video calls. And we have a ton of video conferences every day. We pick up the phone as well. We all use the same phone system, so that's wonderful. So we can easily pick up and dial an extension, and it sends me to Uzbekistan and talking with their COO over there. So the kickoff part, absolutely, we can start it on text. But the meat and potatoes of the conversation really do need to be face-to-face, or through video, or through a phone call. However, we do need to wrap and summarize the conversation. Then we put that in writing as well. So I have found what works best for this office especially is go ahead and start the conversation online, bring it into that face-to-face video, whatever we gotta do, so that I can see your body language. It's very important to me that I can see if you're feeling overwhelmed. I can see if you're understanding and nodding in agreement. You know, as well as I do, 80% of communication is nonverbal. So if I can't see your nonverbals, it's very challenging for me to immediately be able to guide the conversation where it needs to be. But then I create a ton of SOPs. So we have SOPs for everything. We have SOPs for how to email, SOPs for each of our customers, you know, as you should, though. And through writing the SOPs and teaching and training with the SOPs, I've also found that it still helps to send the SOP, pick up the phone, have a conversation or the video conference regarding it. And then at the end of that, having a nice little summary email between all of the parties, just so we're all on that same page and we have the end of that conversation, because then you know that we're all on the same page. If I've sent you a summary, that is because we have all agreed that we all understand.
I almost wonder if, because of the challenges, in the end, your organization actually becomes more effective at communication because it's not taken for granted, because you know of the challenges that exist there. So when you take it that seriously, when you do those steps, you ensure less conflict, you ensure less misalignment, you don't have wasted effort or energy, you know, applied because somebody's, you know, freaking out that, you know, so-and-so said XYZ. Whereas in other organizations that maybe don't have that same attention drawn to it, have right. actually the same challenges, and are just less aware of their impact or their effect because they haven't been forced to have to learn the skill set the way you guys have.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. You know, I really, not only am I given the authority to do that here, but I'm given a lot of autonomy, and I always try to pass that down. You know, it starts at the top. If I have it, everybody should have the whatever authority and autonomy that they need to live in. You have to give that to people, because then they take accountability and ownership for their communication and for their performance. Yeah. When employers try to take the onus of responsibility for all of that, that's where a lot of that miscommunication, that misalignment comes in. The employees, we're all adults. Treat them like that. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Whew, I know, a passion of mine as well. But when you treat people with respect and, you know, act your wage, as I've heard over and over and over again, when you support by offering good benefits, offering a good salary, and then on top of that, you're offering the safety of an environment that you know is stable and safe, and you can come to me with anything. I have an open door policy. I don't think that we've had any serious emergencies. I know I can't think of anything that has been incredibly negative since I've started. I've actually found that with the open door policy, more people come to me with solutions than they do with problems, which is great. Because in other roles that I've had previously, you know, HR and operations is kind of the dumping ground for.
Yeah, you don't want to become the complaint department. That can be toxic for everybody involved, right? You don't want to just be a place where people go to complain.
Precisely. And you want your team to feel accountable for the solutions, because mm-hmm. then they're going to want to engage in it. And so it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You treat people with respect and give them a little autonomy and authority, and voila, they want to be part of the team. They want to be here. They want to communicate. They want to understand their coworker. They're not afraid. They feel safe to say, I don't know, or I don't understand what you're saying, or could you help me understand, you know, what you were asking of me? But if you don't have that safety, then people aren't going to ask questions, and they are going to be afraid that you're just going to talk over them, or because their English isn't as good as yours, that they're less than in some fashion. That is not allowed here. Nobody is less than. We are all the same, regardless if you're the founder and owner, you know, all the way, like our truck drivers, everybody is on the same field, and everybody deserves communication and to be respected and to be seen for their identity. That's so important to us here.
So you've got you've done a lot in this space. I'm curious how you either train or develop on helping people to have that level of self-awareness to engage, like you yourself are speaking to it really well. How do you help your other leaders and people know to do those same steps or to engage in that way?
Absolutely. I've been holding trainings myself. We started with, hey, we're the directors here. What does that mean? And really defining everybody's roles and what it is that they do here and the value they provide. And once I was able to really hone in on that and have people understand the value, they were able to take that and start passing that to their employees. Additionally, I just started all kinds of trainings. As soon as I see kind of a pattern, that's what the training is going to be regarding. So we had, you know, we had medical benefits. So I had a benefits training, just giving the basics of here's how you explain to your employees what is happening with their benefits. We've done the same thing with email, with communication. If there's new processes in play, we all get together. I sit here with the directors and we map everything out. I So yeah, it's mostly me doing a lot of trainings. I will say we had a very, very, very awesome meeting about patience and how through being patient, you're showing respect and value. And that I think was almost a turning point because it was like, oh my gosh, obviously if I listen to people, they feel heard and they feel happier and they're gonna, you know, they perform better ultimately. So it has definitely been a process. I've been here since July of last year, the beginning of July, 4th of July was actually my starting time. And so I've been here since then and we've had trainings every month, just depending on what's going on in the office or if somebody is, you know, if somebody just needs additional support in a specific thing, whether it's, hey, you know, I'm having escalation issues in my department. How do I de-escalate? Or, you know, an employee came to me and they're having a lot of issues at home and they're not sure how they're going to be able to keep up with their personal life and their professional life. What do I do? So we've tailored our trainings to really support the directors and what they're finding their challenges are. Definitely patience is a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can see that. And I feel like what it always makes me think of. So I have 3-year-old twin girls. Oh. One of my little girls, she's always saying, patience is so hard. It's so hard. And I'm like, yeah, but you really need to have this skill set. It's really, really going to be important to you. So I'm always emphasizing that to her.
Absolutely. Patience. And then I feel like listening has kind of devolved over the years. And I don't have a catalyst for that. You know, what is attributed to that? I just find that listening has become one of those soft skills that's rare. It's hard to listen and it's hard to receive a message with the intent that it's sent, you know, especially because as you were saying, people hear and speak based on their previous experiences. So if I have an overseas teammate who's had very negative experiences with impatient Americans, for example, you know, like, well, what are you saying? Well, I can't understand you. Well, just have somebody who speaks English call me. It's like, whoa, okay. Then I get on the phone with them and I explain to them, you know, I am sorry that that happened to you. I understand that it's common, unfortunately. And that's why I make this place their safe space because they deal enough with that in the world that they don't need to deal with it here at work. But that even happens to my remote staff here in the States too. You know, it's tough out there right now, but I want this to be the space where people thrive and learn and they ask questions and they try new things. That's what makes the company innovative is when you communicate different challenges that people are having and you have the safety of saying, you know what, I'm not in that department, but I have an idea. And then communicating that with them. Mm-hmm. And that's how you get the innovation. That's how you get those different perspectives and those great ideas. It's very exciting. And especially when you have people with all of these different backgrounds in different countries coming together to try to solve a challenge or a problem or to teach communication. Because communication is a study unto itself. You know, I'm sure people spend lifetimes doing it and they still fail at it. So yeah. Whatever we can do here to help mitigate that, we will.
You bet. It's kind of an art rather than a science, if you will. So I'm curious, given that the challenges of people overseas and here and different time zones and everything, how do you approach, you know, training and development of so many different resources spread out? How do you accomplish that challenge?
Absolutely. I rely heavily on my teammates, so heavily. I have my equivalent overseas, and her name is Zarina. And Zarina and I work heavily to make sure that employees are supported. If we're finding that somebody needs additional training, I reach out to her. I let her know what I'm observing or what I've experienced. And then she goes and she delegates to that director. So there's definitely a lot of delegation that happens. I have a great team of directors here and I can go to any of them at any time and ask them, hey, can you help me with X, Y, and Z? And they would be more than happy to help with that. So it definitely requires a lot of delegation and a lot of one-on-one. So I have weekly one-on-ones with each of the directors. We have our monthly group check-ins as directors. And then every other week, I check in with all of the department heads, regardless if you're a director or a manager. If you are a leader in your department, I get all of us together. And every other week, we walk through our issues and talk about that. The team oversees. We do have 24-hour, we are 24/7. So nights, weekends, days, nights, we are here. And how do I communicate all of that? Well, luckily we have a really good team that works here at night as well. So I work with them one-on-one to make sure that they have everything that they need, whether it's documentation, SOPs, if we need to create a new process in a software, I make sure they have all of that. And then they take it and they run with it, because we really do believe in autonomy and providing that authority to go and delegate as needed and to share the knowledge. That's another thing that I'm really proud to say. I did have a little bit of a hand in, which is, you know, I have found in past companies, tribal knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all in your head. And, oh, I don't know how to do that. Go ask so-and-so. But I've been given the check mark, the let's do it, to really share the knowledge and make sure that everybody has access to it at any time. And if we need to update it or, you know, evolve it because we change processes, then I do require the directors of that department or of that entity or that platform to keep those updates regularly. And then we'll host everybody together, make sure everybody's aware of the updates, and then just get back to work as normal.
I think it's so interesting when you think about those like standard operating procedures or the processes that you use. They can be construed as being like you have to operate under them, or you don't have any autonomy or ability to make decisions, or, you know, like sometimes that's kind of like a response to some of that. But then when you do it correctly and you're creating those boundaries for people of like, here are the things that are going to keep you on the road so you don't run off. And then you give them that autonomy to still accomplish how they go about accomplishing those things. Then you really hit that sweet spot where people know what they're supposed to be doing and they can make their own path towards it. But you don't run the risk, like you talked about, of tribal knowledge and really not knowing how things get done or having any way to hand it off in the event that you need to hand it off. And so I think it's an interesting challenge as you navigate that, or as a lot of organizations navigate that, especially as they go from smaller to bigger, as they're growing. Because when you're small, you don't have to, everybody kind of just knows how to do the things. And then as you grow, then you really need it, but you're resistant sometimes to actually doing it. So I think that's it's an interesting challenge around those processes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, you do, and I like how you framed really defining the boundaries. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is actually something that I had to get better at myself. Not only do you have to give the task and the why and the value and how much we appreciate you doing that, but you also have to give the boundaries. When you give autonomy, you still need to define where that autonomy lies. So thank you for mentioning that. That is a work in progress, and that is something that I am continuously learning myself. Definitely have not perfected it yet, but because we've been really pushing, you know, patience and grace and having the benefit of the doubt, if there is any of that, you know, straying outside of your lane activity, we do take a step back and it's like, okay, that was not intentional. That's actually on me because I did not properly define the boundaries. And so I take responsibility for that, because that is my job. That is my role, is to properly define those boundaries. And if I have done a poor job with that, you know, other people are going to feel the effects of it. So when we do run into those issues, yes, that is something that we work out constantly. And one thing I love about Sam is that he likes being included in a lot of that as well. And sometimes if I am having a challenging time explaining an SOP or standard operating process to somebody, he will sometimes come in and he'll be like, you know what, let me explain it as well. And so I'll explain it in English. he'll explain it in the native tongue that needs to happen. And then we're able to bridge all of that and come to a consensus, and everybody feels better and they feel empowered because they know what, where they stand and why it's valuable.
I think the last thing you just said is so important, because it's when you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, and you understand it, that is where you have the maximum ability to make an impact. And the place that people struggle so often is when they're not sure if they're doing the right thing in the right way and what the repercussions are. And so the more that you're clear, while still giving that autonomy, the better, you know, those results are and the impact is.
Oh, and we have quarterly evaluations as well as annual evaluations. The quarterly are specifically performance and task based. So and we do have a scale, we rate 1 to 5. And I remember earlier we were talking something that actually reminded me of that. But it's learning how to interpret the review. It's learning how to interpret the feedback. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're trying to create that foundation so that you know how you're being perceived, and then we know how you're perceiving how you're doing your task in your role. That way we can come together and say, okay, now we're aligned on these things. We probably need to touch base on these few items so that we can get aligned. And then we know for next quarter what we're doing well at, what we need to improve on. So those are more task based. Whereas our annual review is the overall view of the year. And then, you know, usually you get a nice little evaluation and a raise during that time too. So those are definitely the more fun ones. Yeah. But I believe that people deserve to know how they're performing. And that is also part of the why and the what you're here and the value you bring. Because if you're not having those conversations, and then once a year, it's like, you were communicating poorly. You need to step it up. Fix it. And it's like, you don't hear any feedback for a whole other year. Like, so what are you going to do with that?
It's such an interesting topic. And I mentioned, I was speaking to this expert around feedback the other day, and she said something that was really powerful, which is we kind of treat feedback often as if people are broken, that there's something wrong that has to be fixed. And if instead, when we go to look at our people or to have those conversations, if we can be looking at how do they grow? And we'd be framing that input all from how do I continue to grow and be better and contribute more and accomplish more? It changes the nature of the conversation pretty significantly. And I thought that was such wise, you know, wisdom there to enter those types of conversations instead of saying, you know, there's poor communication. I think we can improve on or even I think as you develop more communication skills, I think if we do these 5 things, your communication skills will get stronger. And now it's about what they're going to do to grow that skill rather than about what's wrong with them, that there's something missing or not good enough. And we all know that we could be better because we can always be better. So when we're talking about, oh, okay, yeah, I can grow. If I give, you know, 5 training presentations, that's going to grow my ability to communicate and put on training presentations. Great. I'll do that. That sounds good to me. But if you come to me with, you know, your communication and presentation skills are need to improve, well, now I feel like there's something wrong with me. And it's really a slight difference, but it makes a big impact, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have very clearly defined KPIs and metrics for each of our roles with clearly defined career paths. So if you come in here as a junior account executive, you know that if you're meeting these KPIs and these metrics within this time frame, that at the end of that time frame, when we do our evaluation, that you will be promoted to account manager. And we do that for every department, for each individual. And one thing that I also love about working here is maybe you need to make a horizontal change instead of a lateral. Yeah. And that's fine too. Once you can start to define people's strengths and work with them so that they see, oh, I'm really talented at this, then the company and the individual can come together and say, you know what? I know you started as an accountant, but you're actually really qualified for sales. let's try it out for a little while, see how it goes. If you meet these KPIs, this would be the path for that. And it's really unfair, just to backtrack slightly, but it's really unfair to have that ambiguity for your teammates. Why wouldn't you want them to know their value? And if they meet these objectives and if they improve in these key point indicators, that they know they're going to advance. Like, that's how you get people excited about their role. That's how you get people wanting to advance and better your company. So why wouldn't you want to arm them with that information?
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about so many good things that your organization's doing, and it's and such a positive impact that it's having. I'm curious, kind of asking that feedback or that question, but from a business perspective, what is something where, or what's an area or something that is a growth area, is something that if you could bring something to support your organization or do something to further progress or help your business be more successful, what is it you would most like to bring or offer, or you think would really help the business to be more successful going forward?
Boy. Okay. I have to pick one. You know, it's funny, the thing that we're thriving in and the thing that I feel that we can most improve on is our ability to communicate. I truly believe in my heart of hearts that if people had intentional communication where the intent of the message is being sent and received in that same manner, oh my gosh, we would solve like everything. We could probably solve world hunger if we could just have proper communication where people are listening and speaking and creating that safe space. So if I could do anything, if I could snap my fingers and teach people self-awareness and those tools to put in their toolkits to make them better communicators, oh gosh, I'm all for it. I'm ready for it. But I do know that it's a work in progress. And again, it requires patience on my part to slow down and to teach these things. But I would absolutely say the thing that we're doing really well in, and the thing that we can most improve on, is communication.
Isn't that funny how it's always, it comes full circle almost all the time. Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely love that answer. Well, I so appreciate you coming on and having this conversation. It's been a great conversation. Any final thoughts or any final suggestions or things you want to share before we wrap up?
Well, thank you again for having me on today. Communication is my passion. And if there's anyone out there who would like any kind of help with their communications, whether it just be between a board of directors or international, I would love to help you with that. And I would also love to learn from you if you have any tips or tricks or anything up your sleeve that you have found that works best. I'd also like to give a shout out to my boss, Sam, and thank him for the opportunity to live into my passion and for giving me the space to push out these initiatives and really create a culture here. So thank you, Sam.
That's a really powerful endorsement, because most people struggle, or a lot of people struggle, with their managers or their leaders. So that level of gratitude, that's huge, and that can go a long way and make a big impact. So I just applaud everything you guys are doing and all of your efforts, and so appreciate you coming on and spending time to talk about these challenges. So thank you, and we appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, and I hope to connect again in the future.
Yeah.